Welcome to the Chief AI Officer Podcast,
where AI meets leadership.
And here is your host, Sanjay Puri.
Welcome to another episode of the CAIO Podcast, where we delve into the world of AI and technology with some of the brightest minds leading the charge. I'm your host, Sanjay Puri, and today we have an exciting guest with us, Munir Hafiz, the Senior Vice President and Chief Information Officer of TransUnion. As a $3.8 billion revenue company, TransUnion is at the forefront of leveraging AI to drive innovation and deliver value to consumers and businesses alike. Today, we are going to explore the challenges, opportunities, and innovations Munir and his team are navigating in the AI space. We'll also uncover what makes TransUnion an attractive destination for top AI talent and learn from Munir's experiences and insights. Munir, welcome to the CIO Podcast.
Thank you, Sanjay. I appreciate you having me.
Awesome. Munir, can you tell our audience a little bit about your journey to becoming the Chief Information Officer at TransUnion and what led you to this role?
Sure. So I've had a fairly long career. I started off about 30 years ago as a software developer. Throughout my career, I've had different roles with large international organizations, and I've looked to complement my experience over the years to find that the different components that you need to really get to a CIO, CTO role, from playing operational roles, strategic roles, managing teams, projects, et cetera. So over the years, I've worked at almost every role that you can imagine, from running PMOs to projects to infrastructure to security, et cetera, in IT organizations for global organizations like PwC, Deloitte, EY. And what brought me to TransUnion really was an exciting opportunity. Some of it was networking. I knew the CTO of TransUnion from other events. But critically, the opportunity was really exciting to me in that TransUnion had, over the course of 10 years, acquired 25 different companies, had a lot of legacy technologies in different regions around the world that weren't all integrated. So the opportunity for me was coming in and creating a global cohesive technology landscape, an operating model. So that was a very exciting opportunity for me. I had done something similar at Deloitte many years back. So I think the exciting nature of that kind of a transformation, where you're taking a model that was more geared towards acquiring companies, leaving them alone, but then that leads to a very costly and very slow progress in terms of being able to implement. So that opportunity really is what attracted me to TransUnion, as well as my relationship with the CTO and believing in the vision that he was trying to drive towards.
Oh, fantastic. Munir, there's so many things you said that I have questions for, which are relevant to our audience. There were some that I was going to ask later on, but my memory is not what it used to be, because I might forget. So I'm going to ask them now.
Sure.
I'm going to rattle off a few things, because you said some important things and we'll try to address them all. One of the things that you talked about was, the multidisciplinary perspective that you have brought to this role. We have a lot of our audience who are looking at becoming a chief AI officer or something like this in a role. This is a new role. This is a new world. So one of the questions I have for you is, for our aspiring chief AI officers, what kind of skills, because you are doing this, and what kind of skills are necessary for that? That would be question one. The other thing you mentioned, which I think is a very important one, you knew the CTO here. What kind of role does networking also play? When it's, networking, relationship, and sometimes networking has become a little bit of a negative term. So just say relationship based on credibility, done a job, a good job that you did in the past, because people are saying, hey, how do I get to be Munir when I grow up? So I think that's two questions and a few more, but then I'll come to that. So can you just address some of that?
Sure. Maybe I'll start with the second one. The second one is a little bit easier. So on the relationship side, to me, and I remember an executive recruiter once said, your net worth is equal to your network. So it's all about relationships. And I think that's really critical, not just in terms of building a network of peers and coaches, mentors, to be able to compare notes, learn while you're on the job, but also to help you find other opportunities. But also once you're in a job, whether it's a CIO or CAIO, the relationships and credibility is really at the center of being successful in the role once you're in it, right? So to me, and there was a book a long time ago that I read, Never Eat Lunch Alone. Mm-hmm. And I remember as an engineer, you know, I would always want to work through lunch so that I can get more work done and be mm-hmm. able to get home earlier. But I always forced myself to always go to lunch with somebody different every day just for the relationship aspect. And that comes in super handy, not just as people leave and you have contacts in different organizations, but it also helps you get your job done in your current organization, because that those relationships you fall back on when times are tough, right? And you have to have difficult conversations. Now, that ties into kind of your first question of what kinds of things make you successful or prepare you for that. And relationships is one of the key things, as what credibility, really building credibility within the organization. Many organizations, almost all organizations nowadays, are trying to figure out what to do with AI. Mm-hmm. And there is a little bit of hype in there, right? So there's some skepticism. So some organizations come from the top down and say, look, you know, we're going to fund an AI program, AI COE, and you start driving mm-hmm. From the top down. There's other organizations where you have to build it from the bottom up, mm-hmm. where you have to show the value, be able to do use cases and show the business value that comes out of it and build momentum by doing multiple use cases. That's kind of the approach that we've taken at TransUnion. But all of that, whether it's top down, bottom up, it's all based on, are you able to sell? Are you able to sell your vision and be able to secure, one, the funding, which is super critical, but two, the support of the business teams that are going to be impacted and that need to adopt and change to leverage the technology to change their business processes. So I think the number one thing to me is relationships. That's in my career, I've been very, very fortunate to have built relationships with folks that have been great mentors and over the years have given me lots of advice. I think that's probably the second piece. Nobody can do it alone, no matter how smart you are. Listening to mentors, people who have been there, done that, and getting advice. I was told a long time ago, gift of feedback, because not everybody can process feedback positively, right? Because sometimes it feels like an attack, right? If it doesn't come through as constructive. So building the network of mentors that can help guide you through the journey, especially ones that have been at that level. I've been very fortunate, and it's, you know, more luck than talent, but I think it goes back to, I've spent a lot of time and effort in my career building relationships and investing in relationships with people. So that's kind of number one that I would say that's really important. Obviously, domain expertise, and sometimes there are certain domains that are easier to transition into kind of an AI dedicated focused role, where data science, machine learning, right? Those kinds of roles, they're ingrained with the technology. Mm-hmm. In my particular case, I started from a CIO and adopting the AI technologies rather than being sort of a native to data science and machine learning and AI, right? So you can do it from either direction. There's pros and cons to either one, but I do think varied experiences will be really critical, and a very strong business sense. A lot of times I see, and this is not just in AI, technologists are often very focused on trying to do technology for technology's sake, as opposed to focusing on where is the business value? How can you show a return on investment? And that could be hard savings of resources. You can have margin expansion, or it can be something soft like CSAT, right? So really understanding what value you're trying to add, is instead of focusing very hard-nosed on the technology. And I've seen many technologists over the years in my career, myself included, with some of the feedback that I've received to grow in that space, that really don't understand how to sell the technology vision that's in their head. They understand the technology, but relating that to a non-technical audience and to specifically business value can be very, very challenging. So I think that's a skill set, irrespective of whether you're coming sort of through the data science, machine learning, or software development, or enterprise IT. That skill serves you well in any of these roles, but certainly is very critical here, because there's still, and certainly over the course of the last 6 months, there's been a lot of skepticism, I should say, on the hype or overhyping of where some of this technology may be. So I think those are the things that can come to mind that could help somebody that's aspiring to get to these levels.
Well, you've given some incredible nuggets for our listeners, Munir. I don't know if I can keep track of them, but first one was your net worth is your network, listeners. Second is do not eat lunch alone. For someone like me who does not have lunch, I'll have to start eating lunch. Number three is, sometimes you go bottom up, sometimes you go top down. It does not matter. But look at the business case, and what is the value of the business case is what Munir is saying. That becomes very, very important. Relationships become important. Domain expertise becomes important. I think incredible suggestions that you have made for our listeners. Munir, I got so caught up, and there are several other points that you made in terms of Center of Excellence and others that I'll come back to. But we have a global listener base. We have members of Congress, policymakers, CEOs of large AI companies, entrepreneurs, et cetera, around the world. They might not be as familiar with TransUnion. Can you just give them, our listeners, just a quick brief of TransUnion and your role in TransUnion?
Sure. So TransUnion is a data insights company. It's probably most famous for being a credit bureau. So in the US, for US listeners, if you go in and get a mortgage, right, you get your credit score. But we also are in 36 other countries. For example, listeners in India, for example, might be familiar with the CIBIL score. So we provide data insights to enable the commercial transaction of being able to get a loan, for example, right? So that's really kind of the core business. It's expanded to many other areas where we help with fraud detection, marketing, audience targeting, payday loans, all sorts of things like that. They're all related to insights on individuals. We have data on over 1 billion people worldwide, and we continue to enrich that data that helps us advise organizations, whether it's a bank that's trying to determine whether they want to give you a loan, or whether it is a credit card company that wants to determine whether they want to target you for a pre-approved credit card, for example. Those are all things that we help with, and we do that across the world in about 36 plus countries.
Wow. You are, as you said, a data insight company. What role, Munir, does AI play in the daily operations and strategic initiatives at TransUnion?
So I would split that kind of into two areas, right? So from a product perspective, given that we're a data insights company, we have been working with AI and machine learning for many, many years. That's not something that's necessarily new, right? And you can get technical about the definition of AI versus generative AI, right? But a lot of companies have already been doing some level of machine learning over the years. And given the space that we're in, that's no different. Now, in terms of the daily operations, where we're talking about, for example, customer facing, right? Mm-hmm. So we have to take calls from customers, but also from consumers. There's regulation in different countries. So if you call in and want to, especially with the national data breach that just happened recently in the US, where almost the entire US's population of social security numbers were breached. Mm-hmm. We've had massive volume increase of people calling in to lock their credit to protect themselves from identity theft. So in that we have regulations in terms of how quickly we have to respond. If you call in and you want to say you want to freeze your credit, we have 1 hour to be able to process that. So customer and consumer facing call centers is a huge part of what we do. We have over 1,100 call center agents around the world, and my team is responsible for all of the technology that supports that. Well, we've implemented AI for simple things like accent localization, as an example, right? So an agent in India, an agent in Philippines, when they speak to a US consumer, they come across with more of a US accent to make it easier to understand, right? That's an application of AI. We've done other things where, like a lot of organizations with chatbots, right, being able to answer questions so you don't even have to call to go to a call center agent. That seems to be one of the more common use cases that I think a lot of organizations do. We leverage a lot of AI both for our consumers, but also from a daily operation perspective, we do that internally. So we use a product called Converso that has ChatGPT integrated with it to be, and we offer it as a internal digital assistant. We call it Ava, the associate virtual assistant. We call our employees associates. So it's the associate virtual assistant, where we're looking to be able to have our employees be able to make requests and ask questions about their benefits, or say, hey, I need to reset my VPN password or whatever it may be. And for ChatGPT within Converso to be able to execute on that, as well as, you know, in case of, hey, I want to reset my VPN password, rather than having call, be able to just chat with the ChatGPT chatbot and be able to make that happen, or whether it is, what are my benefits for maternity leave or whatever in a particular country, for ChatGPT to be able to consume all of our internal collateral to be able to respond to that by fine tuning the answer. So we've started to use different AI technologies fairly extensively. Again, the most common use case that you read about is in sort of the chatbot space, whether it's external consumers or into your internal employees.
Great. In our conversation with chief AI officers, customer interactions internal, externally, comes across as one of the top applications. Munir, you are operating in over 30 countries or so, just take an average number. Does that make it difficult? Because we have a lot of listeners, we have chief AI officers who run, Fortune 500 global companies. Because, you talked about language, India, Philippines, you modifying accents, culture. But there's also different regulations across the board. So when you look at AI, and this is becoming, there is the EU AI Act, now we're talking about US regulations. Do you find, what are the challenges or opportunities? And this is for chief AI officers, your peers who are listening, who run global companies.
Yeah, so the challenge that we've run into, so we've set up what we call a data risk committee, right? So all of the AI, everybody wants to do AI, right? My team runs all of the corporate solutions. We have about 400 solutions that we support, everything from Workday to Salesforce, et cetera, right? All of the kind of the standard enterprise applications. Every single one of them has some form of AI. Mm-hmm. So what we've wanted to do is make sure that we are able to funnel everything rather than sort of open it up as a wild, wild west, be able to funnel everything and be able to have privacy, legal, information security at the table to be able to make a decision about what we can and can't allow our associates to do. So from a regulation perspective, where the struggle is, as a global organization, we try and roll everything out as a standard global solution, right? So as an example, we just rolled out Microsoft 365 Copilot and Bing Copilot. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of work that we had to do across the different regions. So Colorado just came out with a new law around AI, right? Where there's concern about the data privacy, whether it's training the LLM with customer, consumer, or employee data. So what we've had to do is really work with our legal and privacy to understand the evolving regulations around the world so that we can, at the center, be able to quickly analyze and say, okay, this particular use case, Yes, we can enable that, and that's going to work globally. Before we did that, so as another example, we rolled out BYOD Mobile a couple of years ago, and it took us about a year to a year and a half to do that because in every country, the regulations around BYOD is different.
Mm-hmm.
So what we learned from that is we needed to have a global body, particularly on legal risk compliance, mm-hmm. that is able to analyze our needs on a global level rather than on a region by region level. And again, I've worked for a lot of global organizations. That is not uncommon. It's not uncommon to have certain capabilities that are local, especially when it comes to legal, because the laws are so varied across. So I think to me, what my advice would be is have a strong understanding and have people who are assigned their responsibilities to understand the regulation across the different countries, and sometimes like in the US states, to be able to understand as we're looking at a technology, are we able to roll this out globally, or are we going to have to exclude certain regions from that certain from that capability because there is a unique law? So having a global capability, you may have to, as an example, let's say with Bing Copilot, in some regions, in some parts of the world, you may have to disable uploading a file because they mm-hmm. could upload a file that has personal data in mm-hmm. it, right? As opposed to enabling it to just answer a question, right? Where that risk doesn't exist, or code generation, for example. So I think having at the enterprise level, people whose day job it is to think about how do we enable and roll out AI is really critical. If you try and do it sort of side the desk and try to do it country by country, you'll end up in that boat where either you're going to have localizations, then you don't really have a truly global approach, or you'll run into the situation we ran into with BYOD, where it takes you a very long time because you're going region by region, mm-hmm. right? Getting legal opinions. So I think that to me was the biggest step forward for us, to have a central committee that is able to look at these privacy and legal laws globally.
So having a central committee for legal and privacy laws, one of the reasons I ask is when I run a separate podcast called Regulating AI, and we our focus is we talk to lawmakers. We've had members of Congress, Senate, members of the European Parliament, etc. And one of the things we talk about is global harmonization of AI laws, because it makes it so difficult for companies like you. Imagine if you had, right now you're dealing with Colorado. Now in California, there is SB 1047, there is EU, then there's China doing its thing, there'll be India doing its thing, Africa doing its thing. Now Canada is coming up, Japan is coming up. So imagine the challenges that you have. So I think what your point is, have somebody, something that is global. We need to shift a little bit towards, you know, some of the things that your peers are interested in. Can you share a recent AI-driven project that you're particularly proud of?
Yeah, so one of the things that we've looked to do is to come up with a strategy of how do we roll out AI. So we partner with Deloitte to look at our internal use cases. Deloitte came in, spoke to all of our corporate process owners. We've identified about 90 different use cases where we feel like there could be some real benefit from a AI introduction, improving processes, improving quality of output, et cetera. From there, we were then able to say, okay, let's take one use case and let's prove this out, right? I talked earlier about kind of top-down, mm-hmm. bottoms-up. We're approaching it more bottoms-up, where we're saying, look, we've identified all these use cases. Let's take the top three. We've started actually with the top two. One I mentioned already, which is Ava, our associate mm-hmm. virtual assistant, which is a chatbot to help our employees with questions and right. help desk issues. The second one that we're working through is on contract lifecycle management.
Mm.
Where AI is really good is on natural language processing. Yep. So if you talk about contracts globally, right? So this is kind of the flip side of the conversation we just had about the complexities of AI in a global world because of legal. Now you can leverage AI to help you solve the legal issues that are separate and different across the world. So we're looking to leverage Salesforce Einstein, DocuSign, and be able to leverage those to be able to consume our legal contracts that are specific by country, so that what we can, when we engage with a customer, we can say, give me a template of a contract for this type of customer in the UK or in the US, right? So that we can start the process of contract negotiation, the back and forth redlining, right? So though that is an area that we're starting to really dig into. And while it's not complete yet, it is an area that I think is going to have a real profound impact in terms of our ability to move very rapidly with our customers, as well as solve a little bit of the problem of kind of the legal structure and legal contracts that are different in every country by having AI consume our contracts that are based regionally, and to be able to help us give answers that are contextualized to that particular country. So you can say, I want a contract for the UK or the US.
Fantastic. So, I mean, for our listeners, think about the speed of response and also the cost savings that have been generated. So, you know, people think AI is up in the air, but people like Munir are actually doing some real tangible work. And we will talk a little bit about that, because this is very, very important for your peers. And there are several questions that came in from your peers. Is, Munir, that AI is moving so fast. You know, it's changing. I mean, you know, you've got large language models, you've got small language models, you've got multimodal, you've got agents, et cetera, et cetera. How do you prioritize which AI initiatives to pursue? I mean, you talked about customer support, you now talked about lifecycle contracts, et cetera. I mean, and you obviously, one of the things you talked about, you kind of given the answer, you talked about the bottoms-up approach. But is there anything else? Because this is a question from one of your peers, is how do you prioritize? Because there's so many, there could be hundreds of use cases. Everybody's coming up with a use case on AI now.
Yeah, so to me, so let's say you're in an environment where you sort of have to prove that there's value, business value in the technology, because it's most of these are not cheap to implement. So to me, the starting point that we looked at is a couple of different angles. One angle is the readiness of the business, right? So you can have a great use case, but the change management and the business's willingness, that business, that function or BU being willing to invest the time and the resources and have the buy-in to make the change. So that's one important element. The second element, really critical, is what is the business value, and how quickly can you show that value? So when we were talking with Deloitte about the use cases, we're talking about things that we can turn around in 6 to 8 weeks, right? We're not talking about things that we're going to do in 6 months, right?
Yep.
Now, we have talked long-term, and I think this is a decision that that companies have to make, whether do you want to invest in creating your own LLM or not, right? There is, or do you at least want to fine tune and use a RAG approach to enhance LLMs? But you know, if you're, the way I'm looking at this is we've got to have a few wins to show the value, where I can show the business value so that we can create the momentum. And then at that point, make the investment for some of these larger kind of like AI COE type initiatives. So the first one is the business readiness. The second one is the business value. The third one is really the technical complexity. So, if it's something that's going to take you integrations with 10 systems internally, and it's going to take you a year to do, that may not be your best use case, right? So you want to use something. In our particular case, we already have Salesforce, we already have DocuSign, we already have them integrated, we have the licenses. So it's a fairly low cost way. We don't need to buy anything new, install anything new. We just have to configure it and be able to tie it into the business process in Salesforce. So that's another element that's really important. So business readiness, business value, the tech complexity and how quickly you can implement it. The last piece that was important to me it was, and this is what we engaged with Deloitte with, is everybody says they have AI.
Mm-hmm.
Even toothbrushes have AI today, right? Everything has AI. Now, what is the reality from the hype, right? So what we relied on Deloitte on is help us understand. So we did an inventory of our 400 corporate solutions that we have. We narrowed it down to the top 30 that actually said they had AI.
Mm.
And then from there, we analyzed, well, which of these were really generative AI, right? Mm. Just because you just say you have AI doesn't mean you actually have generative AI. So we took the list, 400 down to 30, down to 10 that actually had generative, truly generative AI. Then we looked at, okay, out of that list, do we need to buy licenses for any of them, right? Going back to how quickly can we implement this? So that's where we started narrow down to, okay, well, Salesforce, Einstein, DocuSign, those are all things we have licenses for. It's already implemented. We can turn around quickly. So that's kind of the thought process that we went through to look at, oh my God, there's, you know, a million things we could do, to let's look at what's practical and let's build momentum and show value. In the case of CLM, there's going to be some soft values where the CSAT with customers, right? But there's also going to be some hard savings in terms of how many hours we need to use from legal and procurement to review redline documents, right? So we're looking at kind of both of those.
Oh, that's fantastic. So you said business use case, business readiness, technology complexity, those are some of the key things, and what you have currently in-house rather than, you know, and, you know, the time to get it done. I think those are fantastic things. Can you talk a little bit also, I mean, you talked a lot about these things, but in terms of cultural and change management with employees, is that also, does that also factor in? Because, you know, a lot of your peers talk about that as being an important aspect of implementing AI. How do you manage cultural and organizational changes?
Yeah, so there's a couple elements to that. Change management is always the most difficult part of any technology, let alone of something like AI, right? And there's some mm-hmm. skepticism in terms of whether it's actually useful. People are worried about whether it's going to get rid of their jobs, right? So that AI has a whole nother dimension to it. But I think what's really important is the education and the training part. So I'll give you an example. We rolled out Bing Copilot to the entire organization globally. Mm-hmm. One of the things that people underestimate when you're talking about, especially generative AI, is sort of the discipline of prompt engineering,
mm-hmm.
right? So prompt engineering is a discipline in its own right of how do I ask the right questions to get mm-hmm. what I need out of it, right? And mm-hmm. while, you know, OpenAI and many of the big tech organization like to believe, well, it's super easy and simple, mm-hmm. anybody can do it, but prompt engineering really is a discipline, and getting people to understand, what can I do with it? What can I not do with it? What am I allowed to do with it? So what we've done when we talk about change management for something like Bing Copilot is we've done a massive communication campaign. We've done office hours where we actually brought Microsoft in and we did demos of what it is you think you can do with this. We've also put out FAQs of, here are, you know, 10 examples of things you can do with this that can improve your productivity on a day-to-day basis. Now, in the case of Bing Copilot, you're not as much changing the process, right? So it's less about change management. It's more about training, awareness, education, so that people can get the most value out of the tool that we just rolled out. In the case of CLM, that's going to be a little bit harder because that is going to be true change management. We're going to change the process. This is not just a tool to make you more productive, but you're actually going to change how you do your work, right? And this goes back to the point I made earlier about kind of some of the criteria and the business readiness, right? Mm-hmm. The business has to be ready to take on that change management. Technology can support, but technology can't lead the way. So if we're talking about how is a salesperson going to change how they interact with their customer, with legal and procurement behind the scenes, reviewing contracts. That is a business process change. And that's where we can help and support, but we need to partner with the process owners that manage the sales process to be able to educate, train. And that's why we're looking at a control pilot with a small group, and then train the trainer, if you will, right? That that they sing the praises of that solution to other salespeople, and to basically, you know, this is the greatest thing since sliced bread. If one salesperson hears it from another salesperson, that gets a lot more traction and credibility than if a technology person comes to you and say, hey, I have this great tool that I think you should use.
So you're creating internal champions is what you're kind of saying.
Correct.
That makes a lot of sense. Just as a follow-on to that, Munir, how important is it to have management, C-level or board-level support and visibility for AI initiatives in large enterprises? One of the things that we hear, you know, the National Association of Corporate Directors, NACD, just recently came out that every board right now, this is the probably the number one topic on the minds of corporate boards, et cetera. So it is an important topic, but coming to your perspective, because that's what some of these chief AI officers, aspiring ones, want to know. How important is that visibility and support from the C-level folks?
So to your point, every investor call, right, every earnings call, every company is getting asked that question. TransUnion is no different, right? So, you know, we talk at length on the product side, right, where our secret sauce is that gives us competitive advantage. But also we're talking about all of the corporate use cases that help us, you know, do margin expansion by having lower cost or better customer satisfaction, makes us more competitive. So I mentioned earlier our data risk committee. So we have various members of that. Part of that is the chief of staff to the CEO that helps us make sure that we're connected so that as we're talking about these use cases, talking about these benefits, we're able to roll that into our investor messaging back through the board so that we have a position of what's our strategy and approach, right? So I mentioned earlier on the corporate side, we engaged Deloitte, we interviewed our corporate functions, we came up with the use cases, now we're going to do some pilots, right? So we're developing a strategy towards a larger vision and mission, and coordinating that is, in many cases, you're trying to get to the boardroom to get them to listen. In this case, it's really they're asking you, right? There really isn't much need to push, because we're essentially getting asked, okay, what are you guys doing? What's your strategy? What's your approach? So making sure that you have the risk that I see, and you know, certainly TU was not immune to that, is shotgun approach. Everybody knows AI is important. Everybody wants to do AI, and then everybody goes once, right? And then what you do is you end up stepping in each other's toes, duplicate effort, it's not coordinated. So that was also one of our lessons early on, is to make sure that we have all of the right representatives cross-functionally, not just legal and compliance that I mentioned earlier, information security, but also from the different corporate functions, to make sure that we are coordinated in our response so that we can take our scarce resources, apply them to where there's the biggest business value, and be able to communicate that message to the board and then eventually to the street.
So I think your point is that visibility is there. TU has tremendous visibility. Just listening to you, Munir, is there also a challenge or a responsibility to set expectations right with the board and the C-suite so they don't expect some magic bullet to, you know, hey, you know, the AI genie is going to rub and suddenly, you know, I'm going to either my revenue is going to shoot up, or I'm going to have new products, or my cost is, my EBITDA is just suddenly going to go this way, or et cetera, et cetera. Is that something that has to happen by chief AI officers to set expectations right?
I do think it's a balance, right? You want to generate the excitement and the support. And there's certainly areas where AI is going to be very transformative, but there's certainly a level of over expectation. So I'll give you an example. you know, we had announced to the street, we've taken a lot of action internally. You know, we're shifting our employee base to global competency centers around the world. So one of the things that we needed to do is do a knowledge transfer, mm-hmm. right? Documentation knowledge transfer. So there was this expectation that we're going to use Microsoft 365 Copilot. Mm-hmm. It does an amazing job at giving you summaries and action items after meetings, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or Teams Premium, they both do that. There was this expectation, well, why don't we just use that to have a knowledge transfer session, and then it will record everything mm-hmm. that the SME is going to say, and then, you know, we can transcribe that and use it. And then we don't need tech writers, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that was the hypothesis, which on the surface was an excellent hypothesis, right?
Mm.
But once you got into it, you started to realize that it's really not meant to be sort of a detailed transcript of every step, more so summary and action items, right? That it wasn't the ideal use case for it, right? So it's a productivity enhancer. It's not quite at the point where we can say, okay, we don't need tech writers anymore. We'll just have Microsoft 365 transcribe everything that that people are saying and then just turn that into documentation. So I do think it's good to start with a hypothesis, but managing expectations, having clear outcomes, because what we were trying to measure, we partnered with a tech writing organization and we wanted to measure, okay, how much more productive is Microsoft 365 Copilot going to make you in knowledge transfer? And we were trying to measure, is it 5%, 10%, 50%? Excuse me. And we generally found it's probably in that 10 to 20%-ish range. So that's where it was like, okay, all right, you know, maybe it's not quite there yet. Now, all of these technologies are moving very fast. May not do that today. Maybe a year from now,
mm-hmm.
it might be there. So I do think it's important to start with a lofty goal, but manage expectations. We're not going to be able to let go of all of our tech writers because Copilot is going to be able to do that for you today. Let's test it and let's see what the empirical evidence tells us. And then we can make plans based on what we find, as opposed to what we're hypothesizing based on the hype that's out in the industry.
So set lofty goals, but manage expectations is what you're saying. I think it makes a lot of sense. Munir, have there been any partnerships, collaborations that have been instrumental in advancing the AI agenda that you have?
So there's been external partnerships and internal partnerships. So mm-hmm. externally, certainly partnering with some of our key vendors like Microsoft, like some of our key SIs like Deloitte. That has been very key to be able to bring a perspective
mm-hmm.
of what are other customers, clients running into, right,
mm-hmm.
with these technologies. Are we not doing the right thing? Are we not looking at the right thing? So having these external partners is important. I do think somebody like a Microsoft is really critical in terms of how you can get the most out of their technology, but you may not get a independent perspective necessarily mm-hmm. on how effective it is. So having like a partner like a Deloitte or an EY or mm-hmm. partners like that have implemented it in multiple clients and can give you a perspective, which is why we partner with Deloitte to say, hey, tell me out of these top 10, which ones are real, right?
Yeah.
Like which ones are going to actually add value and which ones are hype, right? So that mm-hmm. so those external partnerships are really important. The internal partnerships are just as critical. Whether it is with information security, that is super important, right? Because our industry is heavily, heavily regulated. We have very sensitive data on people around the world. So secure cybersecurity is our top priority. So making sure that everything that we do is through the lens of cybersecurity is really important. So that partnership along with legal compliance and then with key business partners, right? So in my particular case, I support all of the corporate functions.
Mm-hmm.
They're all at a different level of maturity, right? So having a deep relationship and an understanding of essentially who are my customers internally, HR, finance, legal, marketing, sales, et cetera, and understanding where they are in their maturity level and who would be best positioned to be able to recoup the most in terms of the value out of our investment into the AI technology. And to your question earlier, who's best prepared to manage the change management aspect of that is really important. So those partnerships internally, understanding where your internal customers are in that maturity curve and who's ready, who's willing, and who's prepared. And those are three different things, and they don't necessarily all coincide in the same in the same situation, right? So understanding who's ready, willing, and able to be able to engage is really critical from a partnership perspective to make sure that you're tackling the right use case that you're going to be able to see all the way to fruition, where you can show the business value, and including the change management that's associated with it.
Very, very helpful. So our listeners, what he's saying is, there's a mix of external and internal partners. External can be software vendors, Microsoft, et cetera. But then he has someone, or maybe a consulting firm, that gives him independent eval of who's real, who's not. And then internal partners who are RWA, ready, willing, and able, and have that capability. So that's very, very helpful. Munir, I mentioned to you one of the key goals that we have with this podcast is to democratize AI talent. We want to make sure that the incredible talent that is there and valuable talent that is there does find its way to incredible innovative companies like you. And I think all through this, if our listeners, if they've not got the incredible stuff that you're doing, then I'd be very surprised. But still, just for our listeners who are AI experts, who are looking at their potentially next opportunity, next gig, what makes TransUnion an exciting place to work in the field of AI? And more specifically, what do you look for when you're building your AI team? That's what our listeners want to know.
Yeah, so when I look at any opportunity working in an organization, there's a couple of things that I look at. One is the culture and the mission of the organization, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, our motto is information for good, right? So I feel a personal pride in terms of the service that we deliver that enables people to achieve their dreams, whether it's to buy a house or buy a car, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a societal impact that the business mm-hmm. has, right? Mm-hmm. So it's important to me that the work that I do has some positive mm-hmm. impact on society. So that's one angle, which I think TransUnion does really well. The second element around culture and what we do. So TransUnion, we're about 18,000 people worldwide. Probably half the company, 50 to 60% of the company is in technology. We have mm-hmm. thousands of developers. So even though we're a data insights company, we're more of a technology company than anything else, right? Mm-hmm. So what I look for going in, all right, so looking at, oh, I want to be a technology company that's like a Microsoft or a Google or Amazon, right? The typical names. I think working for a company like TransUnion that may not be one of those big names and we're not necessarily perceived as a technology company, but technology is the core and the foundation of the organization and our competitive advantage in the market. And the majority, the largest population, single population that we have are developers and technologists. We have thousands of them around the world. So if you're aspiring to work in somewhere where you can have a positive impact on society, that has a positive culture, that is focused on technology as a competitive advantage, and are surrounded by technology talent, and where the organization recognizes that that technology talent is what will make us successful and give us a competitive edge against our competitors, then TransUnion has those in spades. And that's what attracted me here. That's what keeps me here, is the fact that that there's no shortage of technology problems that we're looking to solve, trying to be innovative and hiring the best and retaining the best talent around the world. That to me is irrespective of what company it is. Those are the ingredients that I look for that excite me at being in an organization and certainly at TransUnion.
Yeah, fantastic. Listeners, I'm sure you can feel the passion. As he said, it's a mission-driven organization. It's a technology organization, and it has an incredible culture. And that's what has kept Munir in this role. So I'm sure, Munir, you're going to get some, hopefully, some good responses to this. Munir, I could go on for hours and hours, but maybe we need to get you back here. Towards the end, we have a little bit of a, we've been talking about a lot of heavy stuff, a little fun segment. It's the lightning round, but it is focused on what you are. So you ready? It's just, we need a one word answer from you.
Sure. Born ready. Let's go.
Okay. Born ready. That's Munir. So Munir, one word answer, GPUs or TPUs?
GPUs.
Cloud or on-prem?
Cloud.
Okay. Biggest AI challenge, data or talent?
Talent.
AI ethics, priority or requirement?
Requirement.
Open source or proprietary AI software?
Open source.
More important in AI, speed or accuracy?
Accuracy.
Awesome. You did fantastic. Munir, that was awesome. Munir, finally, for our listeners, you've had some incredible journey so far. What advice do you want to leave to give to CEOs of organizations and others who are looking to establish a chief AI officer role or build out their AI capabilities?
Yeah, if you look at to establish somebody, whatever the title may be, right, to drive your AI initiatives, the biggest factor is, are they somebody that can rally the organizational support, sell a vision, and are they business savvy? Those are things that are really critical in most C roles, whether it's a CIO, CTO, CIO. But a lot of times, those are not necessarily always the strengths of strong technologists, right? So being a bit of a salesman, being inspiring, being able to market and sell an idea, and being business savvy, those are kind of the key criteria that I would look for. You can always find somebody who understands technology, but that doesn't, especially in the case of AI, where there's still a bit of, at least in some organizations, right, where there's some skepticism because of hype factor, et cetera, you really need to focus on selling and establishing a whole new discipline. So those would be the things that I would look for.
Oh, fantastic. You're the first one who said, have somebody who can sell the vision. I think it's a very important trait because this is something new, somebody who's got passion and also has business sense. That's what Munir is telling our listeners who are setting up or hiring chief AI officers. Munir, thank you so much for sharing your incredible insights, experiences with us. It's clear that TransUnion is making incredible strides in leveraging AI to drive innovation and enhance both employee and customer experiences. And to all our listeners, I hope you found, like I did, today's conversation incredibly enlightening. And if you're looking to stay ahead of the AI game, don't forget to subscribe to the CIO podcast for more insightful discussions with leading experts. Until next time, I'm your host, Sanjay Puri. Stay curious and keep innovating. Munir, that was fantastic. Thank you again from all our listeners, but thank you for me. I really enjoyed it. And I had a ton more questions, but we'll have you back.
I appreciate it, Sanjay. Thank you, and to your listeners as well.